Hi, it's Diane. It is Thursday, November 3rd, and so far we have Leslie and Pat, and we'll wait and see if Brian joins us, but we're going to jump right in. So who wants to start with celebrations and check-ins?
I will, Diane. My celebration is that I'm started to refocus back on this Impact ADHD program because I had started and then kind of just gotten waylaid. So getting back going on it. So I'm just glad to have made this group call.
So what have you noticed that since the last time you were on? What have you been noticing that's been going on at home?
I have 4 kids, and I have an 11-year-old boy who is he's just having some sleep issues, and I just started him, we just saw a counselor for that, and then we're going to see the psychiatrist that's associated with that practice, because I've always felt like the ADHD evaluation kind of was just my input and then the teacher's input. Which was from first grade, and now he's in sixth grade. And so I'm kind of happy to have somebody else looking at it when we see the psychiatrist. But he was also diagnosed a year and a half ago with sensory processing disorder, and I've heard a lot of times the symptoms mirror that. And I'm kind of interested, you know, I know that some of the non-stimulant medication for ADHD helps with anxiety, and I'm just kind of trying to figure that all out, whether that will be a path that we try to see if that would help, you know, even more so than what the current medication of Vyvanse does.
Awesome.
I don't know if that all makes sense or not.
It does, and I think that it's what you're saying is that there's some mystery that's been going on for you on the medical front, and that you're feeling good about taking some steps forward there to, you know, to really kind of understand what's going on. And you're reengaging here, which is kind of the other side of it, which is the parent management, parent training piece of it. So it sounds like you're just jumping back in, Pat.
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Leslie, what's going on for you?
Well, this is actually a little bit on the, it has nothing to do with my, well, maybe it does, but I, things around the house have been a little bit stressful, just and we can certainly jump into that later, but so after Halloween on Monday, I had been kind of fighting a cold, you probably hear it, and on Tuesday I woke up just feeling terrible, and instead of going and doing the entire list that I had on my to do, which was like grocery shopping and all this stuff, I basically just said, you know what, I'm dropping the kids off at school and then I'm going to go back to bed. And it was such a big thing for me to do, but I realized that part of the reason I have been kind of losing my patience is just because I knew I didn't feel well and I'm trying to get stuff done and still trying to get it done. Despite not being able to sleep because I don't feel well and all this stuff. And I finally had to call a timeout and say, well, I'm not helping if I'm acting like this, so I need to go back to bed. That was big for me.
Wow. Yeah. So how hard was it to do?
How did everybody do?
No, how hard was it for you to do that?
You know, I don't think it kind of got to the point where I probably should have done it earlier. So at that point, I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to do it. I asked my husband, like, what do you want? I was going to do groceries today. You know, what do you want for dinner? I'll just go pick up that. And he's like, no, I'll just pick something up on the way home. No big deal. Like, I'll pick you, you know, I'll get soup or whatever. I'll just call you when I'm about to get home. And the world, you know, is still running. It's great.
Well, and I guess I'm curious, you know, as you reflect on it, are there other times, I mean, this is one of those kind of obvious sort of, I am completely under the weather and I need to disengage. Are there other times that maybe disengaging might help in a different way? It's kind of the question that's coming to my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have the hardest time disengaging when I'm feeling fine physically, but when I'm stressed out and I feel like I have to get everything done and I start to lose perspective. So, you know, this is becoming clear to me, especially around the last few times I've been on this call. I've been struggling with the issue of, you know, getting my son out of bed and getting him out the door and, you know, lack of motivation in the morning. And I really, I was so focused on it that I almost think like I was stuck in the weeds and couldn't really step back from it. So, you know, we haven't solved the problem, but I feel like, you know, having made that realization, I should have made it earlier to kind of step back and just kind of take the time to watch, take notes, figure out what's going on, because I don't tend to do that. I just want to solve the problem. And that's when I need to step back, because then I just spin my wheels and try to do things that really aren't necessarily the right answer or even the right step, you know, the step in the right direction.
Yay. Well, I got to tell you, that's just like, it's a testament, because I think that that's part of why the model, we feel like this model works, is that before, it's so easy to just jump to solutions. So it's like, I've got this problem, here's what I'm going to do. I've got this problem, here's what I'm going to do. That didn't work, let's try this. You know, so like we just kind of bounce back and forth and throw solutions. And there's so much to be learned if you can kind of take a step back and go, okay, where am I taking aim? What's really the challenge? What's going on? And we talked about, you know, what's going on with the executive function and activating the brain last time.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with me? What's going on with him? What's going on with everything? Then what might I try? And that's kind of the stage we're at in the model. And then you actually take the action. And so it's great that you're seeing and experiencing that live, Leslie. Awesome. Somebody else joined us from Maryland. Who's on?
Yes, this is Sylvie.
Hi, Sylvie. How are you?
All right. And you?
Good, good. Are you normally in, which group are you normally in?
This is my first time joining a conversation.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you here. So let me just kind of give you a quick overview. Right now we're all checking in and just kind of sharing a celebration or a challenge. And since you're new to the group, please, I'll have you introduce yourself as well. Then we're going to do something called taking aim. And I don't know if you've listened to any of our recordings or anything, but I'll help you take aim. You have?
Okay. I listened to the recording from last week.
Oh, great. So then we'll take aim. I'll do a little lesson for the day. We'll have a conversation about the lesson, and we'll jump in, and everybody will kind of figure out what they want to do with the information from today. So do you mind just kind of introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about maybe a celebration or a particular challenge that you guys are struggling with?
Okay. I'm Sylvie, and I live in Maryland with my husband and my son. My son is 14 years old, and he has ADHD. So I joined PSS because I wanted to learn about techniques and good ways of getting him to do what we want him to do, because there is a lot of resistance. We want him to become independent, and he resists a lot becoming independent. So, and also there is the issue of homework, which I know a lot of people are facing. So I know that, you know, and I'm really interested in the parenting positively, because I know it works with him. But sometimes I think I lose track of that, and I don't always think of the right things to say.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, well, we're so glad you're here this week. Great.
Thank you.
So you listened to the call last week. You have a sense of what it means to take aim. Is there a particular area? You mentioned homework. Is there a particular area that you want to take aim in our conversation today as we talk about parenting positively?
Yes, I guess the the issue we have with our son is that it's not easy to compliment him, because when we compliment him, sometimes, I mean, it's, you know, sometimes he accepts it, but sometimes he says, "What, did you think I could not do it?" So he doesn't take the compliment. He takes the compliment as almost a criticism.
Yes.
So I guess that would be my aim, to figure out a way to give him the, you know, the reinforcement, the compliment, without him feeling like we didn't trust that he could do it.
Right, right. Well, and I think this will be good, because I think as we talk about positivity and parenting positively today, Sylvie, that it's yes, part of it is about noticing when they do things well and saying and letting them know that we notice it. But there's other components to it. So I am hopeful that in our conversation you'll find some other things that you can do that might be equally supportive and connecting, and he wouldn't necessarily dismiss. So awesome. Leslie, where do you want to take aim?
Just looking at what the subject is today, I've noticed that, you know, I've been working really hard on framing things in a certain way that were positive. Just because, you know, the way I was brought up, if you weren't doing something right, there was no, like, mincing words. It was, you aren't doing it right. And I have a tendency to kind of do that. So that's definitely a trigger for my son. So when I'm triggered, I trigger him. And it just, I can't expect to motivate him if he's triggered and now is on the defensive.
So Leslie, does that mean that you want to take aim on a particular area maybe where you're getting triggered?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been very short with him over the past, like, 3 weeks. And, you know, so it's like the chicken or the egg thing. I'm not exactly sure if it's because he's been kind of not – he's been not motivated to do things, or if it's me kind of stressed out projecting that on him, and so then he's reacting to me.
So can you give – is there a particular area? Is it around requests? Is it around homework? Is it around just day-to-day interactions? Where do you notice that most of the drama and back and forth is happening?
The drama continues in the morning and then around meals. So, again, you know, he's on a stimulant, so he loses his appetite. And so we really try to harness, like, the morning and the evening so that he can eat well. But the issue we find is that the medication we give him first thing in the morning, but it takes a while to kick in. So he's kind of, you know, he just woke up, he's spinning around, and he wants to color, and he wants to do things with his hands, but if he's distracted using his hands, he's not going to eat. And so, you know, it starts off me being, okay, you know, reminders, gentle reminders to eat. But then all of a sudden we have 10 minutes left before we have to eat, before we have to leave, and all his food is still there. So then I start to panic.
So it sounds like there's two areas that you might take aim. One is around eating, and one is around getting up in the morning. And you've been working on getting up in the morning. Which way do you want to go for today?
I think we'll do the eating.
Okay. And it sounds like a big part of it is your reaction to the situation.
So he doesn't have any concept of time, really. So even if I say, okay, 20 minutes, okay, you have 10 minutes, I'm giving him the prompts. And, you know, we've tried putting on timers, but that sets him off. Like, it really, like, stresses him out to have the timer, and he loses it. So we just try to do verbal reminders, and still, it's like it doesn't register. It's for him, there's a disconnect between, you know, he doesn't hate school. He likes going to school, but it, there isn't that kind of discipline or to think of, I have to be at school out the door by 8 o'clock so I can be on to school on
yeah.
time.
So,
I have so then I'm like...
Right, and so you're panicking, your energy goes up, and then he gets triggered, and then it's a hot mess, sounds like, is kind of what goes on.
Yeah, and then this morning, my husband was there, which normally he's out the door already, so he doesn't deal with that, and it was, he, if you think I don't like to be late, he certainly doesn't like to be late, so then
okay.
he gets triggered, and there was two of us, and it was just a complete disaster, and I'm thinking, while this whole thing is unfolding, it's so bad, because it wasn't helping,
wow.
it just makes things worse.
Right. So my challenge to you, and this is kind of the next step after taking aim, is to kind of really look at what's going on. And so
okay.
maybe go back to that chart on page 22, which had the different executive functions on it. Did you do that exercise last
yep.
week, Leslie? And kind of look at, you know, when
I
you
did
think
it, but
about
I kind
that.
I did it on my own. Yep.
Right. So go ahead and just, so while, you know, while I'm going ahead and talking to Sylvia and Pat a little bit, go back and look at what's going on, you know, for which executive function challenges at play in the mornings, is to kind of use that as a framework. But it sounds like you're pretty clear on where you want to take aim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Pat, where do you want to take aim?
Probably my reaction to the sibling bickering and kind of, I feel like they really I have three boys and then an older daughter, but the three boys just kind of constantly after school and through the whole evening kind of go back and forth. And my husband and I just are really, it's gets so discouraging to have such kind of a negative tone to the family. But I think that we feed into it because then we jump in and, you know, saying don't talk to him, and, you know, we're not being positive as well. So I guess my response to this sibling bickering is where I'd like to take aim.
Awesome. Great. So Sylvie, now that you've heard the other two kind of taking aim, you had originally said you wanted to focus on independence and homework, particularly on ways to be positive and compliment him. Does that still feel like the place that you want to take aim?
Yes, I think, I was thinking maybe I should concentrate on one or the other, the independence. I mean, the homework is connected to the independence because for now he really depends a lot on me to getting him to do his homework and even to check that he put everything in his planner and it's not always done.
So can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
So why don't you focus on independence with homework as a place to take aim?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, because that gives you the independence piece of it, but it's, you know, how do you begin to, you know, empower him to do more without you, it sounds like is what
yes.
you really are looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. Okay, so based on the fact that two of you were kind of talking about trigger stuff, I'm going to do like a 30-second version of trigger management reminder because I don't think either of you were on for any of the trigger stuff. Is that, either Leslie or Pat, have you either of you listened to the Sanity School recording on activating the brain where we talked about the process for trigger management?
That's the first lesson.
You have? Okay. I don't know which one that was. Leslie, have you listened?
I have. It's but I definitely have to go back.
Okay. Pat, what about you? Have you listened to the Sanity School lesson on the trigger management?
I've done lesson one, and I want to say that was the first lesson.
Well, and we talk about trigger management all the time, so let me just kind of give the short version of it, because the reality is that there's biology that goes on, right? And so we get triggered, and the part of our brain that problem solves and is creative and is calm and is completely present and does all the things that we need to do to collaborate with our kids kind of shuts down. And so the process that we teach is a four-step process, and the first one is to understand your triggers. You know, so know what's going on. Know what are the things that trigger you. You know, if you notice, I've got a lot of clients that do trigger journals where at the end of each day they'll sit down and say, okay, what was it that triggered me? And what was the story that I was telling myself? You know, so if you walk in and let's say I'm going to pick on you for a second, but it's kind of like you see that he hasn't had time to eat and that means you're going to be late. Is the story you're telling yourself, oh, my gosh, he's going to starve, he's going to be grumpy by the time he gets home because he doesn't eat at school because he's on his medication all day and he's not going to do well in school, and if he doesn't do well in school, he's going to end up failing. And, you know, what is the story that you tell yourself that really is getting you triggered? And so that's the first thing is, what is the situation that triggers you and what is the story behind it? And then the second thing to do is to reclaim your brain. So when you notice, so part of that is kind of noticing as well is where you feel it in your body. So when I start to get triggered, my voice goes up, I start talking a little bit faster, and I can feel the hair stand up on the back of my neck. So those are the, Elaine calls them tells, those are the signals to me that I might be getting triggered. So most of us have that. So if we can become aware of, okay, I'm starting to get triggered, we want to reclaim our brain. So a few deep breaths, a few sips of water, something to kind of get back in our body. And then we want to choose a new perspective so that, you know, if the thought in your head is, my gosh, my child, if the world will end if my child doesn't eat breakfast, you know, if there's another thought like, it's okay, I've got a power bar in the car, he can eat it on the way to school, we'll be fine, or, you know, whatever, or it's okay that my kids are arguing with each other, it's part of what they need to develop their relationship. You know, so if you can kind of reframe the trigger and then move forward from the new thought. So that's just kind of the quick process is understand your triggers, reclaim your brain, look at the situation differently, and move forward from the new perspective. So that's my kind of 30-second, actually it's more than that, minute-long lecture on trigger management. But it's important because I think that one of the things that I talked about earlier is that whenever we do any of these actions and we're now into the critical response area of the model, we want to go back and put everything in the context of what's going on in the brain. And the two most important pieces to focus on are number one is executive function and number two is trigger management, because we see that those are the two biggest challenges in families of complex kids because our stress is high. Their executive function isn't always as developed as most kids their age, and so they're important things to consider. Moving into parenting positively, though, I think the thing, you know, Elaine and Jeremy and I meet, you know, at the beginning of the week and talk about kind of what's the message for the week and how do we want to focus in on it. And one of the things that came up to me for me this week was the fact that parenting positively isn't just about being nice to our kids. It's not just about avoiding the conflict or not yelling or being kind or even not, it's not just about catch them being right, although that's a part of it. There's so many components to this. And philosophically, it's really about putting your relationship with the child in front of the work at hand. So if you've got homework that, oh my gosh, the homework has to get done, instead of focusing on the homework, you focus on what does my child need right now? And I love that question. It's kind of like it's a great trigger for what does my child need right now? My child is melting down. What does my child need right now? My child is having a hard time getting their homework started. What does my child need right now? You know, if we start with that instead of where's your planner or whatever the solution is, we'll potentially go into more of a place of compassion, more of a place of understanding, you know, and on this page 26, there's a list of things that are part of positivity here. It's about kind of just the overall tone of the home, about not taking it personally, acknowledging and validating, showing compassion, championing and celebrating, not judging, being open, using humor and play, being honest and transparent, and then tackling perfectionism are all components of positivity, as is, you know, noticing your child's strengths and catching them being good and all these other sorts of things. But the reality is that, you know, toxic environments and negativity tend to breed more negativity. if we're upset about something, we're going to find more stuff to be upset about. That's just the biology of the situation. And so focusing on what's working and focusing on what our child most needs in the moment is a great way to shift the energy and to really move to a place of supporting our kids rather than focusing on just getting it done. So I'm curious what comes up for the three of you around this idea of positivity, or I'm open to conversations about triggers as well.
Well, I think for me, the fact that you say that, I'm glad you brought up, it doesn't mean that you're not yelling or that, you know, or just being, you know, avoiding conflict and things like that. Because I think that's the hardest thing. Like, I'm really hard on myself when I lose my temper. But what I have to remember is that I'm aware of it. And a lot of times I'll walk away so that I can take a breath, and like, I might have lost it, but I took the step to be aware that happened, and hopefully learn from that and think about what I could have done. And I've gotten, you know, I never was the person that would go back to my kids and say, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to yell, but I've started doing that, and it makes such a difference, because what ends up happening is it opens the door. They'll apologize for what they did, and then we can actually, like, have a conversation about it. And it's so even though it started off poorly, it kind of recovered. And I think that's the thing that I find when I try to start off, you know, gently and ask the questions and get information. It's part of the struggle, because I think if your co-parent is somebody who's reactive, they just want to jump in and know that's not the way it's done, instead of taking a step back. So it is a little bit difficult to sometimes stay on that positive parenting wavelength when your co-parent is kind of five steps ahead of you reacting negatively to a situation. So.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Leslie, what you could design with your co-parent to kind of really say, this is what I find works well. Is there a way for you to either stay out of it or follow my lead, or, you know, manage your triggers or whatever it is?
It has to be pretty thoughtful, because he gets, I've had those conversations, and he always, you know, and I've taken the time to be pretty, like, gentle about it, and like, you know, here, read this, not, and it's always, I always feel, or I think he feels as he's being kind of judged and criticized for the way he's reacting, and he's the ADD parent, so,
yeah.
And I think what he has these moments of kind of clarity, of self-realization, where he's like, oh my gosh, Anderson is me when I was his age. And it's, you know, minus the hyperactivity. I mean, and I think when he has those kind of aha moments for himself, he gets to a point where he's like, I need to do this, I need to do that. But then when push comes to shove, like, it's not something that he's having a hard time putting the time into it or even buying into it. So his reaction is, you know, what, are we going to have a kid who just misbehaves all the time? So I gave him the exercise that we did with the executive functions and all the things that kind of all the areas of the brain and all the different things that people might struggle with, so that he could read it. Because he, and I, you know, I have to ask him if he actually did read it, but I gave it to him a couple of days ago, and it's, there's still that, there's a lack of recognition that there are some executive function things that it's not, you know, there's some issues we have to work on and develop and help him through versus reacting, or he's being naughty, or, you know, there's still some clarity there that needs to be worked out.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like you're taking some steps, and it's not always easy when our partner isn't quite in the same place with things as we are. You know, I think if it feels like an opportunity for you, Leslie, you know, doing a couple of sessions with one of us to kind of talk through how to approach it with him could always be helpful. I mean, I think that this is something to think about, getting some more kind of engaged support on that. But it's hard. Yep. It really is. And so it's kind of, and I would tell you that there are plenty of parents who do it alone and kind of either just kind of encourage their partner to stay out of the way, or eventually their partner goes, wow, that's really working. I guess I need to look at what I'm doing. You know, it's sometimes you just got to step forward and trust. So,
yep.
Other thoughts about,
yes. This is Sylvie. So I like the fact that you say to focus on the relationship with your child, that this comes first, as opposed to, you know, the homework needs to get done. But at the same time, the homework has to be done.
The homework needs to get done, right.
So, and also, like, for example, if I ask him, okay, what's, you know, what's going on? Why can't you start now? Or what do you need? Many times it's, you know, I'm hungry. Okay, so he eats. Then I'm tired. So it's you know, so there is a lot of, so how do you not get stuck with things like that? Because then how do you motivate him to move forward? Because eating can take some time. So then, you know, he does a little bit of homework. Then he wants a break. He gets a break. And then it's hard to go back to the homework. And it's so it's, you know, I understand that it's good to see what is going on and what he needs and all of that. But also the other problem I have is I don't want to cater too much to him. So where do you find the balance?
Right. No, I think that's the right question to ask, and it's about accountability. And when you did the exercise, Sylvie, last week, you said you listened to the Activate the Brain. Did you did you listen to the executive function one as well? That might be another good one for you to listen to.
No, I don't think I did.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the things you were describing, you know, getting started or transition or, you know, whatever. It's kind of time management. Those are all executive function challenges. And so part of it is understanding what is realistic for him and what isn't. And so it may not be realistic for him to just say, Mom, I'll get to it, without some kind of follow-up from you. You know, and it may be that the accountability is, great, I'll check back in with you in an hour and see how it's going. Or, great, I'll check in back in with you in 15 minutes. Or if he's an older child, you said he was 14, you might say, great, when can I check in with you to see how things are going?
Right,
you know,
okay.
So it's kind of like you're holding them accountable by saying, I'm not going to just let you go. I'm going to check in with you. Or if it's eating, so it's like, I need to eat first. Great. How long do you want to take to eat before you want to get started on your homework? Because part of it is that they don't really understand the passage of time. And so they're eating their food and they're reading a magazine or they're watching a video. And all of a sudden it's been 2 hours. And
exactly.
So it may be that he needs a timer, or it may be that he needs a reminder. It may be that, you know, because if he's not aware of the time passing, it may not be that he's doing it on purpose. It may just be that all of a sudden it's been 2 hours and his brain hasn't even realized it.
Yeah, I think that's correct. It's not that he's doing it on purpose. He just doesn't look at the time and doesn't realize that time goes by fast.
Okay, so if you were going to ask your question, so imagine your son sitting there and he's eating his food or whatever he's doing after school. What do you think he needs in that moment? What are three things he needs in that moment?
While he's having a snack, you mean?
Yeah.
well, I guess he needs to have something to signal when it's time to get to homework. Because
so a trigger of something, yeah, so, yeah, like a reminder, a restarter, or something like that. Got it.
Yeah. Mhm.
What else?
Well, there's the motivation, you know, to start. So something to motivate him to get to do it.
Great.
And
what else?
I don't know.
You want me to share a third one that kind of came up for me?
Sure.
He needs some brain activation. I mean, that's the whole role of the snack, right? Is that because he's tired or he's hungry or he's whatever else. So he really does need the brain activation to kind of get his brain going again.
Yeah.
So if you start with those questions, you're going to approach it very differently than if you're like, oh my gosh, he's taking too long to eat his lunch. I've got to get him, or get his, eat his snack. He's got to get going.
Right.
You're going to approach it very differently than if you focus on a restarter and motivation and activating his brain. How
right,
does that feel?
What I remember from activating the brain is like, you know, food, rest. So that's what he's getting. So then what else can I use to activate his brain?
Well, motivation is a great one, right? Because I think that that's the piece of it, is that if he's incented to, you know, if I think that the question is in your head, is there an ideal timeline that would enable him to do everything he wants and get his brain activated? And, you know, you can't necessarily impose that timeline on it, but I think that that's the first step, is kind of like, are there enough hours in the day for him to, you know, take an hour to eat a snack and take a half an hour rest and then get started on his homework? Or is it just, is that unrealistic?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you kind of have a sense of that, then how do you partner with him to create some motivation for him to, you know, get the work done within that time frame? You know, is it a reward at the end? Is it, you know, he knows his favorite show is on at 9 p.m. and he wants to be able to be done so he can watch his show. Is it, you know, is it, I don't mind letting you take a break as long as you can get your homework done afterwards. And if you can't get your homework done afterwards, then we're going to have to revisit this whole taking a break thing, you know, because that can be motivation as well. Does
mm-hmm.
that make sense?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. And in fact, I work some weekends, and over the weekend, last Saturday I was working, so I wrote down everything that he needed to do. And that's something I would like to not have to do, you know, because I want him to be more independent, but that's what I did. And so I told him exactly what homework needed to be done. And I said, if when I come back from work, there's or you have not finished what I'm asking you to do, I will take away your phone tomorrow. Tomorrow you won't have it. But if you have done everything, think of a reward that you would like to have. And so when I came back that evening, everything was done.
So
and I was
how could
amazed.
You? Yes. Yeah, so, how could you turn that into a conversation with him about the importance of motivation?
Okay, so have a conversation with him about what motivates him, or what do you mean about the importance of motivation?
Well, so it seems to me that you had a great example of how when there's a motivation in place, he was able to get something done and his brain was able to activate. And
yes.
So at 14, that's a great lesson, which is, oh, my brain works differently when I'm motivated than when my brain's not motivated. And and because ultimately what you want is for him to learn that so that he can begin to create his own motivation. So you're not having to threaten to take his phone away every time you want him to do something.
Right.
You know, so then it can be, okay, so besides me taking your phone away, what are some of the things that would motivate you to be able to do the things you know you need to do?
Mhm. Mhm. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to just kind of go back to this conversation about positivity. What's hard about some of these concepts of parenting positively, about not taking it personally or acknowledging and validating? Interested in everybody's thoughts.
This is Tricia. What makes it hard for me, like parenting positively, is just the busyness of our whole family. I have four kids, and so it just, I'm just so chop-chop, you know, got to get this done, like we've been talking about. And so I just find it that I just don't even think about being positive. And I know you're supposed to do, what, 3-to-1 or 5-to-1, and mine is probably just the exact opposite, which isn't, you know, which is not good. And it just doesn't come natural is my, unfortunately, is my problem.
Well, and you're really busy, and so it makes sense. It was interesting what came up for me as you were saying that, is that we used to play a game when my kids were little, that anytime anybody said anything negative about a sibling or about a parent, or a parent said something negative about a sibling or a child, they had to follow it with at least two things that they liked about the person. So it was kind of this sort of, it's fine to say things, you know, it's not okay to say kind things, but if you do happen to slip and say something unkind, you have to turn around and say something in the moment. And so everybody kind of got into the habit of it. But I'm wondering how you could kind of create a pattern for yourself, Tricia, that would give you that kind of front of mind perspective of the positivity.
Yeah. Well, I know in the past we had done family meetings, and, you know, we start off with, you know, going around and saying something positive about each one, or, you know, the one sitting to your left, and keep going around the circle. And that, you know, that just kind of sets a focus. And, you know, ideally we should do that every week, but as, you know, I don't know, things always go back to, like ground zero to how they were before you actively start thinking about this. And so we haven't had family meetings in a while. And so I'm just thinking we should really put forth that effort, because that makes it come to the forefront for me when you started off and you're doing this weekly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got that routine, and it's one of the things that you do all the time. That makes sense. Other thoughts?
For me, it's just, you know, to tell him whenever something is done, or you know, that to tell him right away that this is nice, it's great that you did it. But as I said before, sometimes, you know, he's fine with the acknowledgement and the compliment, but other times he reacts to it, and he says, "Well, did you doubt that I could do it?" Or so that makes it difficult.
Yeah, it does. It does. What do you think is it that would make it easier for you?
Well, I guess it's to figure out, to try to figure out when, what makes him feel, you know, what makes him feel like the compliment is not a real compliment, and what makes him accept the compliment sometimes. So I guess it would be, to maybe take notes sometimes that, you know, well, he accepted this compliment, it was done that way, it was about this, and then when he doesn't accept it, what kind of situation it is, maybe that's what, and then I could figure out another way to, you know, to say something positive in those situations, but it doesn't, I don't know. It's a little bit.
I love it. I love where you're headed with this, because you're talking about being curious, right? So it's like, there times that he takes it and other times that he doesn't? And it may not be about the kind of compliment. It may be the time of day. It may be that he's triggered in those moments when he's not taking the compliments, or he's overwhelmed, or he's just feeling grumpy and defensive. The other thing to think about is whether or not there are other positivity tools that he might relate to differently. So the one that's coming up for me is acknowledging and validating and compassion. So it's kind of like if he's grumping on about, oh, this is no fun, blah, blah, blah. And if you say, yeah, I can tell that this is just not something you're interested in doing at all. I get it. I've been there where I've had to do something that I didn't have to do, I didn't want to do, you know. So it's that sort of just, you know, seeing him and seeing what's going on for him and witnessing his experience. And sometimes that gives them the opportunity to kind of say, yeah, this teacher doesn't even understand math and I can't believe they're teaching and they're so stupid. It's like, I bet that's hard to be in that class. And so often we kind of jump to, well, what are you going to do about it? And I think you should do this and you still have to do your homework. And if we stop and go, well, what's really going on for my child in this moment? They need some validation. They need to vent. They need connection. They need, what is it that they need?
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's good to keep in mind that parenting positively is not just giving compliments, but it's also, being there with your child and understanding and showing him that you understand what he's going through or what he's thinking right now.
Beautiful. Yes, beautifully said, Sylvia. That's absolutely the case. And so there's so many different aspects of this, but it's really at its core saying, does my child need a compliment right now? Does my child need encouragement right now? Do they need understanding right now? Do they need a kick in the pants right now? Do they need do they need a break right now? So it's kind of like really being aware and conscious of what we think might be most helpful. And sometimes we'll know the answer, and sometimes we're just guessing. And sometimes it's like, go, buddy, you look completely overwhelmed. Why don't you go take a 10-minute break and let's come back and try it again? You know, and you're just guessing, but you're thinking about what they might need instead of focusing on, oh, my gosh, we got to get the homework done.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. Love that. Other thoughts?
Diane, the thing that comes up for me, I tend to be pretty reactive myself, so it's just remembering pause. I mean, if you don't take that pause, the first thing that's going to come out of your mouth is probably not the best thing, because you're just reacting. I mean, that's my personality.
Right.
I react. I want to respond. And
so what do you do to make sure you remember to take that pause, Leslie?
Oh, I don't know. It's practice. You know, there are days where it's easier than others. I just got to keep working at it.
So one of the tools that we talk about in the trigger management stuff about reclaiming the brain is about creating a habit that you can use when you are triggered. And so I've worked with this with a bunch of clients, and it tends to work well. So it's kind of like if you know that there are times that you need to take a deep breath before you respond to your child because you might react instead of responding. If every time before anything comes out of your mouth, you take a deep breath. And so it's kind of like, honey, what's for dinner? You take a deep breath and you say, turkey, meatloaf, and mashed potatoes. Right. And so you got to get into that habit of taking that deep breath before you respond all the time. Then those moments when you really do need that breath, it's going to be there. It's kind of that's the tool that kind of came up for me as you were saying that, Leslie. What is the other thing is just to, maybe walk around with a bottle of water so you can, or in times where you know you're more likely to be triggered. To take a quick nap in the afternoon before homework, because that may not be realistic for you. But if you know that you've got enough rest before you go into homework time, you might be less likely to be triggered. Those sorts of things. So it's kind of proactively managing the trigger risk. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what comes up for you, Leslie, that you might consider trying?
Well, I think, you know, either the deep breath or, like, taking a sip of water. That way you have, like, can't talk. Like, literally putting a sock in it, you know, and just
yep.
to let your brain about it before it actually comes out. You know, for me, I would love to take a nap before homework time. You know, luckily my so it's not like homework. You know, we really don't have homework every night. I make him do like 10 minutes just so that he gets in the habit of doing it. But I think that has become more normalized for him. Because we've found, you know, he's at a point right now where he can do kind of, for us, it's, you know, there are game type things that he can do in order to get his lessons in and, you know, reinforce what he learned in school that day. It's not real homework. But I could imagine that's going to be an issue because, again, it's the whole motivation thing. We're going to have to, that's what motivates him. He gets motivated by having something that he's interested in. If it's not that task, it's something at the end of the task that gets him to do things.
That's great that you know that. Knowing that gives you a different perspective on how to help him to be successful, is my guess.
Yep.
How true is that?
I think it's very true. And, you know, I think we've learned that for him, you know, where we goofed up early on, and like early on talking about potty training was they were like tangible things. Like, oh, here's a toy, here's that. And he learned how to manipulate that system pretty quickly. but, you know, there's other things that he enjoys doing, you know, like going to a movie with mom or, you know, going out to watch a game with dad, like going to a Bruins game, something, you know, little things like that that aren't so little, it works kind of, it's a two-way street because then we're connecting with him and having that one-on-one time with him. And it makes it kind of special because it is hard when you have a sibling and for the most part, she's always there, you know, and it's,
yeah.
So for him, having those motivators that are, or even if it is like going, you know, having a play date with a friend at a park or something like that, that, you know, he's not quite yet. I asked him actually last week to kind of help me as we're trying to figure out the mornings. You know, what would help you get downstairs? He's not quite there. He's not quite tuned in yet to exactly what he would want or what would get him there. But we're still, you know, I ask him often because I want him to start thinking about that rather than me having to kind of guess and think about, like,
yeah.
Okay, well, that to do this, so that, you know, anyway.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, so let's sort of wrap up. I'm just watching the time here, so I want to give everybody a chance to answer the questions and kind of review what we've covered today. So page 27, let's just take a minute and answer the four questions. At the end of each call, we answer the four questions. So what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What was, you know, was it the conversation about positivity? Was it some idea somebody else had? Was it the reminder about trigger management? What is it that you honed in on the most in this conversation? What's your clarity? What's a takeaway or an aha? What's a realistic action step for you to take? And how do you set yourself up for success with this action? So take down some notes and respond for yourself and to those questions, and then I would love for each of you to tell me at least one aha and one commitment in terms of action. so much. Can I call on you guys? Trisha, mm-hmm. Can I call on you to go?
Sure. What I paid the most attention to was when you said, what does my child need right now versus just getting it done? And so I really wanted to, my takeaway was just to remember to ask myself that question, and specifically with the arguing between the siblings, and then just kind of getting the tone, you know, all set negative for the whole evening, just to try to break that cycle with, you know, what is it that they need right now, asking myself, and then perhaps that's just some engaging of everybody. You know, they're always wanting to play basketball together as a family, so maybe just doing that for 15 minutes or even a half an hour might totally eliminate that bickering if I would just take the time.
Yep, awesome. Love that.
Yep.
Leslie.
What I focused on the most was that, for me, the link between parenting positively and being able to manage my triggers, and that to me was really the aha moment. I mean, when I think about what is really hindering me from all, you know, staying on this path of positivity, it's the triggers. So I really need to work on managing that. So, and when I look about what's going on in the mornings with eating, it is that stress and moving from kind of eat your breakfast to, you know, you failed out of school because you didn't eat your breakfast. I'm going to go back to the Sanity School and watch and listen to that on triggers. But I think what I really need to practice is putting in a system in place for me to remind myself to think and take a breath before I speak when I'm triggered. My son is completely sensitive to tone, and I think if I'm coming back at him with a snarky remark, I'm going to get one right back at me, and it's going to just go back and forth, and it's just going to escalate. So those are my action items.
Awesome. Love that. Sylvie.
Yes. So I focused on the parenting positively, definitely. My takeaway moment is that it's parenting positively is not only giving compliments, but it's also, and mostly I would say it's more like trying to understand what's going on with my child being compassionate if that's what's needed at that time, or validate his feelings, because I really know that this works. But it's something to keep in mind. It's easy to forget this and to go to but the homework needs to be done. So, and then that's when things don't work so well, because the person who just talked said that her child is sensitive to tone, and it's the same with mine. He remarks on this often. He said, "Oh, I don't like the tone you're using now." And so I said, "Well, that's the tone. That's because I'm impatient. I want this to be done." But it's so he reacts strongly to the tone of voice. So if I take a step back and try to understand what's going on, but without really catering and just letting him do whatever he wants, that's where, you know, I feel like there is a balance to have, but definitely to be more aware of what's going on with him, and that will improve. It will improve his whole attitude, and probably will resist less in getting his homework done. So my realistic action is to have a conversation with him about motivation, and you know, just see what he thinks would make him get to his homework in a more timely manner. I think that's about it.
Okay. Awesome. Great. So next week there is a Lifeline call on Thursday at noon Eastern time, and then the PSS groups will meet again the week after next. And so I look forward to talking to you guys then. Great call today, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.